Welcome to Justice for Dean Thomas, a podcast to find justice for the characters and things found in the Wizarding world, but from our perspective. I'm your host, Kevin G, and I'm here with CJ, Shantae, and Natasha. What is going on, guys? Shantae, you waved again.
I can feel the spirit of the wave, and I don't want to disappoint everyone. So, yes, I waved. Hi, everybody.
That's for signing hello.
Yes.
I'm just saying it's a audio medium. So her signing hello doesn't really work for the people.
And you're obviously fluent in sign because you just translated it to everybody.
Oh, I'm glad I can let the people know.
I don't think we want to put that out there. That's easily verified.
I'm not fluent in sign, not at all. Before we get into it, though, you can find us on all social media platforms at Justice for DT Pod. Also, give us those 5 stars on whatever platform you're listening to us on, and like and subscribe because it helps the show out. Guys, I am not fluent in sign. Do not tell people that. I do not know ASL. I saw her wave her hand. That's all I knew. And I think that's it. You know, me and CJ used to have a roommate. His girlfriend was deaf, and so he was fluent in sign. This dude also lived on the couch.
And worked in- Wait, was he fluent before he got with a girlfriend? Or
I'm not really sure if he knew sign before he started dating his girlfriend, but she was deaf and she was nice.
Yeah, and he signed to her.
He was signed to her.
That's a level of fucking dedication. Like, I like you enough, I'm gonna learn another language to, like...
Well, even crazier is that she would stay over and he slept on the floor in the living room.
Yep. And she slept on the couch.
It was crazy.
Why sleep over? Just go home at that point. Like, if I'm gonna sleep over and I ain't got no bed, I ain't getting none niggy, I'm going home. Like, I'll see you tomorrow. Time for deuces.
They got it in on the floor.
They probably got it on the floor. We were probably in the middle of the night. Yeah.
I mean, I might have invited him to my house then, because I tried to be on the floor. Like,
maybe she lived with her mom, and you can't really get it in when your mom is next door.
That's true. Yep.
Plenty of people make it work.
And see, and here's the thing: at 8, because you guys were like 18.
19, 20, something like that. Yeah.
19 in like this frat boy house, right? Mm-hmm. Right? And it's like, you know what? That's totally acceptable. Like 18, 19, 20, you know, nobody has any money, whatever. What gets you is when you're like 35 and the guy's like, you know, you can come
over, but you know. My mama don't like visitors, so.
I got 4 roommates and I'm on the sofa.
Yeah, and your 4 roommates are your family because you live at home. You ain't got no money.
And then they're like, you just have high expectations. It's okay. I might be traumatized. Right? Whatever.
Right? They do that. Your expectations are high. Like, if I have it, why don't you have it?
These are very, very valid points. Questions. These are.
But you're not wrong.
And it sounds like both of you are speaking from personal experience. I hear you. It's tough.
But Kevin, would you date a woman that still lived at home with her parents right now?
Probably not. That's probably no. I am too old for this.
Exactly.
That's a different type of situation. That is wild, and it's crazy that you two have had to deal with this in this day and age.
It is not just us.
Well, you two are the ones that talk about it here, and I understand, and that's unfortunate. And so, yes, at like 19, 20, when we were living with like 6 yeah. people, makes sense.
You know how poor we were? We needed 6 people with full-time jobs to afford 1 apartment in Orange County, California.
Well, California's expensive.
Yeah.
Listen, would you date somebody that had 6 roommates?
Right now, at this age?
No. Not unless they lived in like a mansion, like they were influencers, you know, like a content house, maybe. Mm-hmm. That's about it.
That's a good point. If the house was like CJ said, if the house is like big enough and you're like working there, like in terms of like he said, like it's a content creator type house or an incubator, like let's say they're doing some kind of like innovative stuff, I get it. Like that's a different, because there's a way out, you know what I'm saying? There's a path out of here, and you have like your own space, your own room, like whatever, I get it. But outside of that, nah, if y'all just doing it to make ends meet, everybody work at the grocery store or something. Nothing that's wrong with working at the grocery store, but
this age, all the influencers I see had their own place.
Yeah.
So even now, like, oh, it's a content mansion. Are we doing it? I'm like, oh, honey, you're not, you haven't reached the point that you got your own space.
They collaborate better. You can collaborate.
Now you could do this in an office space and then still have a place you live separately.
This is true.
No, content calls 24/7.
I feel like we're going to have to talk about dating again in book four. So, you know, we'll have to circle back to this and drop it a fire.
Oh, we're going to go off about dating, especially in the post-COVID years. And I've been married the whole time, but I feel bad for you single people.
You should feel bad.
We'll talk about that. Book four, book five, we'll get to that then. Last chapters, we talked about not Gilderoy Lockhart, right? Because we talked about that before that. I don't remember what we talked about last chapters. What did we talk about? So a couple weeks ago.
No, last week was Gilderoy Lockhart, wasn't it? Because we were talking about him and his ocean-sized levels of audacity. We were
talking about the racism of the wizarding world. Because, you know.
Yes. Because we get some more of that here.
Yeah, we get a lot from Draco Malfoy, our favorite little Ku Klux Klan member.
Listen, off the rip, how is the password for the Slytherin common room just pure blood? Pure blood. Like, come on.
Like, I'm like, I don't have only pure blood just Slytherin. Like, how does that make me feel if I'm like a half-blood Slytherin and you're like, and the password is pure blood? Like, oh, dang, I don't think I'm supposed to be in here. Like, yeah, I was like, dang, they really... Really? Oh, damn.
I just can't believe it. So that's why I had to just say
the
that. Like,
head of Slytherin house ain't even no pure blood. Gee, like, really? Really? Okay.
But that's the password to get into the room. And I wonder if this is other racist passwords like this to get into the Slytherin common room when it changes. And Death Eaters. Like, that's another password. Yeah. Man.
Yeah, so, Crucio.
You accidentally curse someone on your way in. Oh yeah, you know what? Oh, dang!
And then Snape comes up. He's like, "You know, you're not supposed to point your wand when you're doing the password."
Zabini, that's on me, dog. That's on me. I'm sorry.
My bad, Blaze. I'm sorry. You okay? Yeah. Need help? You taking him out of Pomfrey?
Get you to Madame Pomfrey real quick.
Who sets the password for the common room?
Draco.
No, Draco. The professor sets
it. That password.
Oh, who sets the password? Who set it?
Yeah, who sets it?
Oh, I don't know.
It's the head of houses, right?
I would think.
I don't know, because I thought the fat lady sets the password for Gryffindor. The Gryffindor and then I thought one. That I didn't think, the statue at Ravenclaw comes up with the riddles.
Yeah. Mm.
So the paintings on the Slytherin dorm are prejudice? Well, damn. Well,
it wasn't a painting. It was just a slab of wall. He just set it to the right slab of wall. So, like, does a slab of wall set the, like, how did that?
I mixed it up with the movie. Lord have mercy. Yeah, that's tough.
That's a good point. Well, let's get into it. Chantay, you have for us the chapters, recovering chapters 10, 11, and 12 today. This first chapter got some Quidditch in it. Let's get into it.
Lord. Kevin and his Quidditch prejudice. All right. So chapter 10, the Rogue Bludger. So, yep. You know, after Gilderoy Lockhart really mucked it up in his last Dada class, he doesn't bring any creatures in. He just reenacts scenes from his book and he forces Harry to help him. And Harry does it because, as we learned in the last chapter, they need a stupid teacher to get them the right potions book. So he does it to placate him and plays along. And at the end of the class, Hermione goes up to him, to Gilderoy, and like compliments him and says, oh my gosh, I need to do some extra studying and I need this special book. It's going to help me learn all about gadding with ghouls. And of course, Gilderoy falls for it. So he signs the permission slip for the book, doesn't even look at it. I mean, let's be honest, even if he did, he wouldn't know the book because he don't know shit.
Well, you know, shouts to him by saying, listen, you think that I'm going to stop the greatest wizard in the second year from getting a book from the library? Come on. Of course, whatever you need. And you complimented me. Let's go.
Mm-hmm. And the funniest part is they go to the library to get the book. Hermione doesn't want to give up the slip because it has his autograph on it. And I'm like, how does she still like caping for this dude. Like, why does she love him so much?
I love this for her, though. This made her human. Like, she's a girl who likes a cute guy, a cute man.
Way too old with great teeth and hair. Inappropriate.
Listen, Shantae, sometimes you meet your heroes.
Sounds like you two and Method Man.
Well, it sounds like you two and Method Man.
Hey, he ain't too old for me. I'm a grown-ass woman. What?
But I did think he was fine in middle school, and he was too old for me.
I agree. That's true.
But listen, Hermione... She's met her hero. She knows he has his flaws, but he's still nice to look at. That's how she feels about it. So she just wants the autograph.
He gives her extra points in class. Yeah. Like,
gets them anyway.
Here's the thing.
Go ahead and, you know, like him because he's good looking. We all have it. We all have the people we had posters of and put them up on our walls. But also realize that he's an idiot. And just be like, he's a beautiful idiot, and that's okay. Like, that's the part for me. Like, you still don't know he's stupid.
That's true. I don't like the fact that Hermione does keep defending him with his idiocy, which is something that is pretty evident, especially for someone as intelligent as she is.
I would also say, though, let's look at the track record of Hogwarts here. We have Hagrid, who fucking snuck a dragon, you know, onto campus, and they had to sneak it out, yep. Right? We got a teacher who only teaches Quidditch. You know what I'm saying? Like, is that a real job?
Hold on. She's a PE teacher.
Which was ever a PE teacher. Real job? But
Hey,
listen.
I don't agree with that at all. So I just want to put that on the record.
I want to make sure it's clear that PE teachers, exactly. You guys have real jobs. Though that view is that of Natasha's only. So I just make sure that's clear.
But my point is, Hogwarts has a history of, you know, hiring kooky people. And Hermione is a rule follower. She's like, hey, if Dumbledore has you here, there must be a reason. She's rocking with our guy, Gilderoy.
She ain't a rule follower in these chapters. I'll say this. She can like a teacher because they're a teacher, but she doesn't like Gilderoy Lockhart because he's a teacher. She likes him because he's pretty. So, fine. He's pretty. He's stupid. Like, just realize that.
He's pretty stupid.
So as they're about to leave, of course, Gilderoy goes, oh, the Quidditch match is coming up, Harry. I was a seeker, too. I was going to do it, but I decided to defend the world. If you need any tips, I'm always willing to pass on expertise to less able players. And Harry almost...
He said, I hear you're a useful player.
Yeah. Harry almost ruined the gag because he's about to be like, but he held it together. And they were able to go,
I'm the youngest seeker in 100 years.
Right?
The fact that Gilderoy said, I would have been on the national team, but I decided to pursue the illustrious career that I have here. As Natasha said, he just has a ton of audacity in what he says at all times.
Oh, yeah.
This is no different.
Yes. So they go to the library, they get the book, and they look over all of the ingredients and what it's going to take. And for once, Harry Potter and Ron Weasley are the voices of reason, because they're like, look, Hermione, to make this work, we're going to have to steal a lot of this stuff. We don't have access. Like, this is going to get us in trouble. Maybe we shouldn't do it. And Hermione gives an impassioned speech about the defense of the Muggleborns and we got to do this. And like, what is there? I'm next. And it convinces them. And they're like, all right, fine. So she talks them into doing all the illegal things they're going to have to do to make this work. And they also find out.
Who would have ever thought that Harry and Ron would need convincing to break some rules?
Right.
You know why, though? She's the only human born or fully human born of the three.
Muggle born. Yeah. Now, I did love that they said we never thought we'd see the day in whole 2 years of being here that Hermione would be the one to get us to break the rules.
And she did it handily because they were like, dang, we can't even say no to that.
Well, Hermione probably looked at the book and was like, this looks like fun. I'd have fun making this. And then when the boys were like, nah, I'm not cool with that. She was like, I'm about to flex my muscle so you can get on board or not, but I'm making this one way or another.
Yeah. And they're like, well, dang. Okay.
Just full nerd moment.
Well, I guess we're making it.
Yes, fully nerd. So We also learned it's going to take them a month to make the potion because some things have to be boiled for like 21 days. They have to get all these pieces. And so it's a little bit of a holding pattern, but they're going to move forward because Hermione said so. So there we head into Quidditch. It's the first Quidditch match of the year. Of course, it's Gryffindor versus Slytherin. And it's also going to be kind of like some bad weather. The weather's not going to be perfect, which is great because, as Oliver Wood points out, they've been practicing and they can in all kinds of weather, and they should be ready. So Gryffindors are motivated. They want to be Slytherin, especially because they think they're so great with their new brooms. Oliver Wood gives a great speech. And the funny part is he ends it with saying to Harry, "Show him it takes more than a rich father to win." I'm like, well, Harry does have more than a rich father. He also has a free broom that was gifted to him by someone else. So I guess it does take a little bit more than that to win. So.
Well, the first off, shouts to Oliver Wood. When he walks in, he says, "So their brooms are faster than ours. And they have that as a leg up on us. Not even going to pussyfoot around this thing.
Right.
I'm going to let y'all know that we have inadequate equipment in comparison. But we are better players. So we're going to do this thing where you use grit to try to dig in and win this game." And then he turns to Harry and says, "It's up to you, kid. You need to beat Draco.
Yeah, you need to win this whole game for us." And Fred and George go, "No pressure, Harry."
But wait, do we see what he says? Get to that snitch or die trying.
Yeah, he made it very clear.
It's a game. Listen, why I gotta die?
And Harry proceeds to follow that advice.
Well, Shantae and Natasha, as we've discussed, there's a big money on these matches.
Yes.
Obviously, there's the die trying means that McGonagall needs to cover some debts from last year.
Would. This better be a win. No dives.
Yeah, so
no
dives. She probably picked Gryffindor to win, but she probably hedged with player death. That way she can cover either way.
So just in case, what's the spread on a game like this, right? You know that the Slytherins have new brooms. Like, what's the spread? I mean,
do you think Slytherin gets 100 points?
Like, well,
that's 10 goals.
Though Harry had a prolific year, are the Gryffindors the favorites coming into this? They can't be, right?
Yes, because are the favorites because everyone hates Slytherin.
That's not how the
book. Yeah, but bookies are neutral.
That's not how the Hogsmeade bookmakers see it.
Sure.
Okay. Sure. It's not a personal thing. This is just numbers. And when you look at the new brooms, they got a new seeker in Draco. The Slytherins have to come in.
An untried
character. True.
That
True.
Brought his way onto the team.
True.
He's Bronny. He's LeBron James Jr.
I think at this point, you're going to give Slytherin 100 points for the brooms. So then I guess the line is set at
50.
Yeah, Gryffindor as 50-point favorites.
Okay.
I know we live in Vegas, but I don't understand what y'all are talking about at all.
No worries.
We'll move on.
So Gryffindor are still the favorites here in this match, but it's a close one. It's a close favorite because you're right. Harry has grabbed the snitch in at least two matches that we know of.
And the only reason why he didn't do it the last one is because he was unconscious after murdering Professor Quirrell.
If Harry plays, he's getting the snitch. That's how it works.
Yeah. He's here now once again. You know that he's set to make this match. New question. This is for CJ. When you found out that Harry wasn't playing in that last match, how far did the line move?
Oh, it went super far.
That was it.
Yeah, No one picked Gryffindor.
Imagine Gryffindor is like 200-point favorite in that game, meaning you already think they're better and they're going to get the snitch, which gives them another 150. That line has to swing by at least 150 points.
Yeah. Yeah.
If not more.
I'm going to do something I rarely do, and I'm going to agree with, I don't know which one of y'all said, I think it was Kevin, said it before. At this point, Harry knows the money he has. As soon as he got to school and saw that Draco bought that entire team brooms, why didn't he buy his teammates new brooms? Thank you.
So like, send a letter. Listen, I got galleons just sitting in the vault. Somebody go get these galleons.
This was the one time I'm like, my guy, you got the money. You could have been like, hey,
I need to outfit the squad. I need to outfit the squad, right? We just looked. There's an upgrade done to the Slytherins. I need to take care of what's going on with the squad. How many galleons is that? Like 3 to 10 galleons per broom? Get him out there.
There's no internet. Like, well, somebody could have went with a letter. He could have sent Hagrid, you know, get some money out, buy it. But
come back with whatever. A bundle of new broomsticks for the Gryffindor team.
So remember, Harry's not very smart. He knows math, apparently, but he don't know advanced math. He don't know algebra. He don't know how to compare and contrast. I don't know.
You're right. So, all right, getting into it.
All right. So we get into the match.
It's time.
And it's heated. They're trying to win. And this Bludger pretty much immediately starts going after Harry. The twins go, they hit it away and try to send it toward Draco. And it immediately curves and comes right back to Harry. So it becomes pretty clear pretty soon that something's wrong with this Bludger and it's targeting Harry. I also like to note the whole time Malfoy is just following Harry around to make fun of him. He is not in any way, shape or form interested in playing his position. He's just there to tease Harry Potter. He is obsessed with Harry Potter. He may be a little bit in love with him. We can talk about that later. Anyways, so the Bludger's coming at him. The Weasleys are trying their best to defend Harry, and it's not happening. As this is going on, Slytherin is racking up the points because the two people who are supposed to be helping to prevent them from doing it are trying to protect the Seeker. So they call a timeout, right? Because they're like, hey, something ain't right. We're calling a timeout.
Well, hold on. During this timeout, you said something ain't right. Oliver Wood said, why aren't y'all defending? One hit Angelina. What are y'all doing?
Where the hell have y'all been?
Yeah, shouts to Oliver Wood being locked in the game, not knowing what's going on with the Seeker, that he has no knowledge. He's like, what's going on with these Bludgers?
Defense wins championships, guys.
Where's the defense? You guys are slacking on the D. And they're like, this Bludger's just trying to murder Harry. And then, and I know you're going to get into it, but I'm just going to say it right here because this is wild. Harry says, you know what? I'm going to just go ahead and take care of this Bludger myself. Then the rest of the team's like, I don't know if that's a great idea. And Oliver goes, listen, y'all, if he said he's going to take care of it, we got to get back to work. Hey, we're going to let Harry take care of this shit on his own. And then the Weasley twins are like, you said to death, but like you were serious. And Oliver's like, the bets are in. And that's kind of what happened.
Do y'all want to face off to McGonagall? I didn't think so.
Well, you talked about Wood saying like one hit Angelina, he's locked in. Bludgers don't hit the goalie. So all he's focused on is the quaffle. He can't catch the snitch. He's not worried about a Bludger. So he's looking at, he's like, where's the ball? What's going on? I got to make sure I stop this. And he's watching his people get fucked up.
Yep.
Like, what I want to know is, how come Fred and George, why did they split up? Only one really need to cover Harry.
That's true. That's true. Listen,
I did think that, too. I was like, one should just be on Harry patrol, and the other one should be trying to, like, take care of business, because you're only dealing with one Bludger at this time anyway, because you know it's going to keep coming back.
Right.
So you might as well just hit it, be prepared for it to return, hit it again, be prepared for it to return. Now, the tough part is that, you know, the way Quidditch works, you got to catch the snitch to win the game. So Harry is looking for the snitch the entire time. If George or Fred is just on Harry, then this should be able to work out to their favor.
Right.
But that's not what we go with. We go with Harry saying, hey, I'm going to just take this thing on myself. I'm going to shoot the moon. And they're like, okay, what a maneuver.
I want to point out that Oliver gave him the choice. Oliver somehow didn't know the Bludger. And somehow no one else notices either that the eponymous rogue Bludger. Okay,
to be fair, Angelina, Ashley Spinnett, they are Katie.
I'm not talking about the other Gryffindors. I'm talking about the fucking referee. Madam, what are you doing? How do you not see that, right? The crowd. Yeah. You don't notice? Like, come on, man.
I feel like Hooch is up there on her broom drinking out of a flask. Just chilling.
Are they still playing? All right. They're good. Like, come on. Come on, Hooch. Like, you need to justify yourself here. So Oliver gives, Harry's like, dude, I can do it. Oliver's like, are you sure? Hey, what are we going to do? Are we going to, if they file an inquiry, that means they'd have to forfeit. So this is the choice they have to make. Forfeit this game and file an inquiry, which, let's be honest, from what we learn about who is bewitching it, there probably would be no evidence. So they would forfeit for no reason. They don't know this, but we know this as the people outside the story. Or they could go through and let Harry Potter deal with it on his own. Harry's like, I got it. So they start playing and the Weasleys leave him to it. And he's actually doing okay. He's like, he's evading. He's looping the loop. He's looking for everything.
He shoots the moon. It's a fantastic maneuver. He shoots towards the moon, dips down, whips a couple of times because he is faster than the Bewitched Bludger. And then he's able to put himself upside down.
Right.
So that way it can confuse it. It's a very advanced maneuver. You asked in the last.
Except, why wasn't he using the bludger to hit other people? Like, you know it's going to come for you.
Right.
You're behind somebody, it's going to go straight for you, right?
Okay.
Like, he could have been using that.
He's up in a whole lot right now. He's in the middle of the air. He's trying to look for a little gold ball. Like, he can't be doing strategy and all that stuff, too, to hit other people.
I'm not here to defend Quidditch, but the fact that this 12-year-old has the wherewithal to shoot the moon, to go with these maneuvers, that's respect to him. You ask, was he actually even good at it? He is. He's a natural at this game. This is the only thing he's a natural at.
Really good at riding broom.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes, he should have shot past Malfoy so that way the bludger in his wake would smash the kid in the face.
Yep.
That's probably what he should have did.
I was like, you can take Malfoy out right now and it'll be even easier to get the ball because no one else is looking for it.
Correct.
But to that point, Malfoy wasn't really looking for the ball either, because as Harry is evading, Malfoy comes up to tease him again because that's all he's interested in doing. And the golden snitch is right next to his head. If he had looked up, he could have reached up to grab it, but he was too busy teasing Harry Potter. And Harry Potter is so like focused on, oh my God, there it is, that he pauses too long and he gets hit by the bludger in the arm and ends up breaking his arm.
Just shatters the arm.
Shatters his arm. On his elbow, which you know it hurt.
You know that hurt.
In our Quidditch episode, I talked about how this game is ridiculous. There should not be a ball that can literally break a child's arm with impact. Okay, this is a non-contact sport, supposed to be. The last Slytherin match tells you otherwise. But this is a non-contact sport.
Right.
The fact that the balls make contact and are able to maim you is ridiculous.
Well, they are magical.
Okay, first of all, have you not been to a kid's baseball game or a teenage baseball game and like they're throwing those balls? Like a baseball can break something.
You have a glove.
A soccer ball.
You're supposed to catch the ball. That's the goal. Then this situation here, this ball is not supposed to be caught by this kid. He can't hit it. He has no bat to beat it away.
An errant soccer ball can break a bone. I've seen it happen. An arm bone, a clavicle, a nose. Like
you said, an errant right? This ball is made to maim.
It's not made to hit him that fast. It was bewitched. It's made to hit you because there's evidence of this. One hit Angelina, it didn't fuck up her shit. She just, you know, she got hurt a little bit, but it didn't break her bone. This one was bewitched to go harder, faster, stronger, whatever. But I would say any kid playing a sport with a ball, you can get broken some kind of way.
This is true, but mm-hmm. I see your point about like this thing was intended to cause harm, unlike these other things where harm can be caused unintentionally. But Harry's arm is shattered and he barely is able to hold himself onto his broom by the way, I forgot to mention, it started raining at this point. The weather's bad. By now he should be used to that because that Oliver made them play in like snow barefoot or whatever. So it's wet, it's slippery. He's gripping with his fingertips to hang onto his broom. He sees the golden snitch is still there next to Malfoy's head and he goes straight at him. Malfoy, the coward that he is, goes, oh, he's coming for me and like ducks out of the way. Harry, who can't use his right arm, releases his broom, is clutching it with only his legs, and reaches, grabs the golden snitch, does a dive, and like bails out into the mud. Gryffindor wins. And then he promptly faints because his arm is broken and he's probably internally bleeding or whatever.
Searing pain.
Yes.
Fantastic maneuver, though.
Right.
That one would have been on the sports channel. Yeah. Which sports center top 10? Yep. 100%. That would have been a SportsCenter top 10.
So he wakes up very shortly after, and who is hovering above him? Gilderoy Lockhart. And Harry immediately goes, no! and Colin Creevy is over there trying to snap pictures. His teammates are running toward him. They're happy because they just won. And Gilderoy says, oh, I can fix that arm for you. And he's like, no, don't fix my arm. Don't do anything for me.
Can you imagine being knocked out and waking up and the thing standing above you is Gilderoy Lockhart? While you're hearing Colin Creevy snap pictures and you know you got a broken arm, how mad are you at that minute?
Like, please just leave me alone.
Even better question. McGonagall knows that this man is a fraud. right? Everyone's aware that this man's a fraud. When he's standing over him, why has Minerva not moved down? Minerva knows how important Harry Potter is to her making money. So I don't know why she's not.
He already made her the money. What does she need him for now?
Well, we have another Quidditch match coming up.
No McGonagall slander will be tolerated. Wait a minute.
There's the slander is that she should have stopped Gilderoy Lockhart from doing anything to this child.
She was nowhere to be found during this time.
Ridiculous.
She was probably higher up in the stands.
She was getting her money. She's like, oh, I won. Pay up. I'm going to go to Hogsmeade real quick.
Went right down to cash this ticket.
Now, here's another question, too. Like, you're at a game. You're used to sport where people get hurt often. Why is there not medical help at the field?
Yeah, Madame Pomfrey should be there.
I thought of this. Let me tell you why there isn't. And because I thought of this exact thing.
Okay.
Madame Pomfrey is but one witch. Okay. She has to take care of the actual hospital wing. If anything happens, you can get the kids over there. We do not have EMTs or medical assistants on hand, though we should, because Quidditch is a stupid, dangerous game. There's no medical attention on hand because Madame Pomfrey's but one witch. So she has to take care of the hospital wing. And so if there's anything that happens, you're supposed to whisk them there immediately. Which is why this is also ridiculous, because Gilderoy is standing over him, makes his bones disappear, and then says,
I'll fix them, and goes, oh, they're together, just not here in your arm.
And then he says, gotta get the boy to the hospital wing. That's where we were trying to go from the beginning.
Yeah, like, Ron, Hermione, go take him. There you go. I love the description, like a rubbery glove just like dangling off his arm. Oh, gosh. So he gets there. Madame Pomfrey is pissed. She's like, you should have brought him to me. What the hell were you thinking? And she says, inept teachers and dangerous games. These stupid, dangerous games. So Madame Pomfrey's on Kevin's side. And she basically tells him, hey, if you had come to me, I could have fixed your arm real quick. But since your bones are now missing, this is going to suck. Drink this disgusting thing. You have 33 bones to regrow. Sit there and suffer.
The fact that she had this sitting on the shelf ready to go, how often does this happen that they have a potion for it?
Okay, let's be honest. Let's be real. She's a teacher at a school with a bunch of children that do magic. Bones probably get disappeared on a regular basis. Maybe it's a toe. Maybe it's a finger. Maybe it's an entire leg. Who knows? It's on hand because she deals with this kind of shit for forever.
Can you imagine being in a duel and someone hits you with a curse that like removes all the bones in your body?
I think you would die.
It'd be like the end of Roger Rabbit where the guy like melts and he goes, and he folds up like a stock. Yeah.
That's what, but you would probably, your heart just hits the ground and you're just organs.
Yeah.
And
splat.
Yeah.
And like you're a bag of blood and organs. You're like,
if you somehow survived, you got to drink the potion to grow back all 206 bones.
That's a wild.
That's a type of torture. I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
So the Gryffindors try to come in and celebrate with him, but Madame Pomfrey's like, get out. He needs to rest and grow these bones. And so, which I think she could have let them stay for an hour because that would have helped distract him as his bones are growing. But she shooed them all out. She was pissed because he should have just come to her in the first place, which he wanted to do. It's not his fault. Gilderoy Lockhart is an idiot. But
right.
They leave and he falls asleep being in pain as his arm is growing. When he wakes up, who is sitting on his bed but Dobby? And we learn a few things from Dobby. We also learned that Malfoy gets reamed out by the captain of his team because he didn't fucking do anything. Love it.
He's just out there being a nuisance. Like,
yeah.
I imagine Malfoy is like Lance Stevenson blowing in LeBron's ear. That's all Malfoy's doing now.
Damn. All right. So here's what we learned from Dobby's visit. I mean, obviously there's a lot of, you know, hitting himself and being so sad. Oh, I can't tell you. But he does tell a lot. He tells that Dobby's the reason that Harry couldn't get through the platform on 9 3/4. That he waited for him to try to go through blocked it and prevented it and had no clue that there might be some other way for Harry to get to Hogwarts. Now, here's where I disagree. Harry tries to blame Dobby and says, you almost got me expelled. And I'm almost like, that's not true. You almost got yourself expelled because you could have just sent a letter and said, hey, we need to ride to Hogwarts. And someone would have come and got you. So it's not fair that he blamed Dobby for that.
Or just wait till somebody walks out. Like, you know, the adults have to leave after the kids go there. They don't just apparate home.
Right. So I know, especially because the car was there. So they would have come out and been like, what the hell? And they could have explained we couldn't get through the barrier. So that's not Dobby's fault. Dobby is annoying for blocking the barrier, but it's not his fault that they almost got expelled. Then we learn that Dobby is also the person who bewitched the Bludger. And Harry's like, why are you trying to kill me? And Dobby goes, I'm not trying to kill you. I'm trying to save you. But he tried to knock him off a broom that was a bajillion feet in the air. Like, what did he think would happen? Come on, Dobby. That's not even right. We also learn more about house elves. So Dobby's wearing a radio pillowcase and Harry's like, why are you wearing that? Put on something else. And we learn that he has to wear that because it's a symbol of his enslavement. And he only can be free if his master gives him clothes, which his master would never, ever do. He can give him even something as little as a sock. Keep that in your mind for later. We also learn that Harry Potter is an inspiration to the oppressed creatures in the magical world because him coming back helped the situation for everybody. I would guess it was horrible during the Death Eater time. And when Harry Potter got rid of, Voldemort, it made it better. Sure.
But we also learned, too, that not only is Dobby, he has the mark of the slave with the clothing. We learned that when he does things against his master, he has to hurt himself. He had to iron his hands afterward when he blocked Ron and Harry from getting on the train. And then when he burned the Malfoys' dinner, he was flogged. So he has to hurt himself and he's also abused. So, you know, they are really and truly treated like shit.
Listen. This is ridiculous. Okay, this house elf bewitched a Bludger and sent it after the boy in an attempt to hurt him enough that it sends him home. He tried to stop the boy from coming to school by blocking the barrier. Just tell the man what's going on. Just tell him.
He cannot.
This is ridiculous.
He cannot tell him.
I've never met you a day in my life, house elf. Yet here you are just being in my way constantly. You're constantly showing up to be in my way. This is ridiculous.
He's trying to thwart him the best way he knows how. And none of them are really violent.
What?
You know, he wanted Harry Potter to get hit by the Bludger. He didn't want him to die. And if Gilderoy hadn't stepped in, he just would have had a broken elbow, you know, whatever. We could fix that. You know, he wasn't trying to kill him.
If I'm Harry, I am choking out Dobby at this point because you put this Bludger on me. You stopped me from going to school. You hid my letters from me. Like, you were just making my life a living hell. And this is only the second time that I've ever met you. Why do I want to deal with you? No, I'm going to kill you now. And in my own suffering.
Oh, damn.
And you know, this is all coming from a good place. Like, Dobby is doing this at the expense of himself. Every time he does something to Harry to thwart him, he ends up having to hurt himself. He's literally putting his body on the line.
He could just not do that. And then he wouldn't have to hurt himself. He could just leave Harry alone.
He's trying to save Harry.
Not very good at it. But one thing we learned from this visit, also from Dobby, is that this is not the first time that the Chamber of Secrets has been opened. So he confirms there's a Chamber of Secrets, and he confirms that it's been opened before. So, oh my gosh. As they're talking, there are some people coming, and Dobby disappears, and we learn that Colin Creevy has been petrified. He did have his camera up, and they try to open it up to see if maybe he got a picture, and the camera melts, and the film kind of just goes away. So McGonagall asks Dumbledore, what does this mean? And Dumbledore says, this means the Chamber of Secrets have been opened again. Double confirmation! There is a Chamber of Secrets and it has been opened before because Dumbledore said, again, double tap. You got a double tap and we got a double tap.
The fact that this man knows it's been opened again means he probably also knows where it is and how to close it. So we should be able to wrap this up right here.
Here is a quote that supports what Kevin's saying, because McGonagall says, well, who would do that? And Dumbledore says, it's not about who, but how. Dumbledore has any slight qualms or any inclination. He knows who's doing it. He just wants to know how.
Right.
He could do something about it and he does nothing. And that's the end of chapter 10.
Ridiculous. Dumbledore, I said before, he knows everything going on at this place and just be letting shit happen.
Awful. Awful. And we'll get into why. Like, I don't even want to go down this rabbit hole. But anyways, so the next morning, Harry Potter's bones are back, but his arm's a little stiff. So Madame Pomfrey kind of works it out for him and says, okay, you're good. Get out. And he goes looking for Ron and Hermione. He can't find them anywhere. He runs into Percy. And the first thing Percy does is congratulate him on his great Quidditch match. And he got 50 points for Gryffindor. Good for you. And so he's like, hey, have you seen Ron anywhere? And Percy's like, I don't know. He better not be in another girl's bathroom. And Harry goes, yep, he's probably in a girl's bathroom. And that's where he finds Ron and Hermione. They're in Moaning Myrtle's bathroom and they're working on the polyjuice potions. And at first Harry's like, damn, that's a little butthurt. You guys weren't waiting for me. They're like, hey, we heard about Colin and that's why we got to get in here and get this potion brewing because, oh my gosh, another person gets petrified. So Harry's like, yep, you're right. Let's do it. He tells him about the Dobby visit and Ron gives a little quote like, you better stop trying to save you or he's going to kill you, which Dobby is horrible at saving people.
Yeah.
Which I don't understand how everybody knows about Colin when it's supposed to be a secret, but nobody knows Harry's secret of like a Dobby visiting. Like the Gossip Network, how do people know these things that are supposed to be secrets, but then there's other secrets that just never gets out?
It's the stuff that people care about, like the really sensational tea. Nobody cares that Harry Potter has an imaginary friend. Who cares?
They had to like carry Colin like through the halls. Other people saw him. Dobby just apparates in and out. Like, who else is going to see him?
So they all think Lucius Malfoy was the one who opened the chamber, you know, in the first place. And we all know that their favorite target for someone's done it is Malfoy or Snape. But I think it's funny when it actually is Malfoy or Snape later, they don't think it's Snape. Whatever.
Well, they grow out of it. Okay. They grow out of it later.
They grow out of it in the wrong time. They did it in reverse. They should have switched that. So everybody's tent around Hogwarts and they're all scared. The first years don't go anywhere by themselves. Ginny, of course, is distraught because we know she's the one doing it and she's upset. And Fred and George are trying to cheer her up by like making fun of her, but it's not working. And then Percy's telling them stop and getting upset, whatever. A black market pops up for protective charms, which I think is hilarious. And everyone's trying to figure out, oh no, who's going to be next? Who's going to be next? Neville's moaning, oh no, it might be me. And they're like, you're freaking pure blood. What are you talking about? And Neville says something that makes me really feel sad for him. It feels like he really needs a good therapist. He has zero self-esteem. He's like, everyone knows I'm almost a squib. I'm like, damn, dude. Got
no self-esteem. He's not wrong. Not wrong, though.
Somebody needs to go give Neville a hug. Damn. Anyways, so they get to the point of the polyjuice potion of realizing that they are going to have to steal some stuff to finish it. And of course, Hermione, who is the mastermind of this whole thing, has already thought up a plan. And she says, you need to create a distraction in potions and then someone can go in and steal. And so, of course, Ron and Harry are like, well, it's not going to be us because, of course, he's going to suspect us. It's going to be Hermione. She's going to run into Snape's stores and steal the things they need for polyjuice potion. So in potions class, they set off a Fred's filibuster. And it lands in Goyle's cauldron and it explodes. And they happen to be making a swelling solution. Why would you need this? I don't know, but they're making it. And it gets on all the people that are all around Crabbe. So all parts like Malfoy's nose starts swelling. All parts of their body start swelling. As everything's going crazy, Hermione runs into Snape's store and grabs the stuff that is needed. Snape has to heal everybody. And he basically says, if I find out who did it, you're going to be out. And of course, he's looking at Harry Potter the entire time because he's like, I know it was you. But he would blame Harry Potter no matter what.
So you have stated that the kids be looking at Snape and Malfoy all the time. It's the same for them. They look at Harry. He, It's always his fault.
That's true.
According to those two.
In this case, it was his fault. He did it. And so now Harry's like, damn, he knows it's me. He's going to retaliate. And so he's like, oh, no, what's he going to do?
What would you need a swelling potion for? Like, what are we swelling?
Well, a guy might need a swelling potion.
Yeah. Wizards don't have Viagra. You do what you got to do.
I don't know why a second year needs to know about the swelling potion.
Hogwarts after dark. All right.
We have a swelling potion. I don't know. So about a week later, they see this poster up for a dueling club. And so everyone's like, oh, it's going to be so fun. We can't wait to do it. Until they get to it and realize it's being run by Gilderoy Lockhart. And now everybody's all sad. So Gilderoy's there. He has Snape there as his assistant, which, of course, we can see how happy Snape is about that. And they first decide to kind of model how to duel for the kids. Of course, Snape wipes the floor with Gilderoy very easily. And Gilderoy tried with the Expelliarmus spell, our first Expelliarmus and the only spell Harry Potter has learned. So obviously Snape's good enough teacher because he taught him that one spell. He tries to play it off. Gilderoy tries to play, oh, I knew it was coming a mile away. I just let you hit me because I wanted them to see. And then he basically gets afraid because he knows Snape will kick his butt, which he probably knew that ahead of time. And he said, okay, everybody pair off. Let's all duel. And so chaos ensues because the kids just start throwing everything. He's like, wait, no, only try to disarm each other. The kids are like, ah, they're throwing everything. Hermione ends up in a headlock with Millicent Bulstrode. Like, it goes crazy. It goes crazy. So they get everyone back together. And then they're like, yeah, maybe we should do a little one-on-one action instead. And so, of course, Snape orchestrates for Harry Potter and Draco Malfoy to go against each other.
Small thing. Dumbledore approved the dueling club so that they could defend themselves. What the fuck are you going to defend yourself against? And it's petrifying you. Like, you're going to be.
It's obviously not happening in a duel. You're right.
Right.
You're not bowing. There's no 10 duel commandments here. Like,
spelling armless to the basilisk. Like, what are we doing here, Dumbledore?
I don't know that the dueling was to learn for this particular situation. I think it was for general knowledge. So that way they're ready to go at another point in their lives.
I think it was to make them feel like they were doing something, because I'm sure they could tell how panicked everyone was, how on edge everyone else. So it was like, at least you can feel like I'm preparing myself in some way, even though this would not help you at all. But sometimes people just need something to do.
True. I did love when they were excited about the dueling club. Harry was like, as long as a certain teacher, and then in walks in both Snape and Lockhart. And he's like, well, neither one of them is who I would have referred.
Two I said not to have involved. Yeah. They were like, we thought it was Professor Flitwick.
Right.
Which that would have been a better idea, especially since he's like a dueling master. Anyways, so they face off and they start throwing all the different spells at them. And then Snape whispers into Draco's ear and he sends out a serpent spell. And the snake jumps out there. And so everyone's like, oh, it's a snake. And Snape's like, okay, I'll get rid of it. And Gilderoy's like, no, I can do it. And then he's completely ineffectual. He hits it, it pops into the air and drops down closer to the students, particularly Justin Finch Fletchley, you know, the muggle-born Hufflepuff. And so Harry steps forward and speaks Parsel tongue and tells the Snape stop. And the Snape I want to note this. As soon as Harry talks to the Snape, it immediately stops and turns to Harry as if he's waiting for his next command, which means it's pretty clear Harry told the snake to stop. So Harry's very excited, like, oh, I stopped it. Oh, and I know the snake's not going to do anything. The snake is listening to him. And so he turns to Justin to think, oh, hey, man, I got you. You're fine. And Justin's like, what the hell? What are you playing out? And so Harry's like, what? I just saved you. Snape gets rid of the snake. Ron and Hermione get Harry out of there. And then they're like, what the fuck? You're a parcel mouth? Why didn't you tell us? And we know Harry's stupid. He don't know nothing. He's like,
Hold on. Right here. I can't say that he's stupid because he thinks he is just talking to the snake in English. He has no idea that he's speaking parcel tongue. He does not know this. He just says, hey, don't remember when he talked to the snake that said that he ain't never been to Brazil?
Yes.
Yeah. He just thought the snake was talking to him. He didn't know that he said. He didn't know he said that shit. Yeah. He had no idea. He thought he was just saying, okay, snake, get up on out of here. And he also thought this is a common wizard shit. Like, don't we all talk to snakes? And they're like, no, my guy. No. No, we don't all talk to snakes. Just like we don't all just see like visions of people and shit. Like, this is some like weird you shit, right? This is some weird you shit.
You've been hearing this voice this whole time and now you're talking to snakes. Mofo, what's going on? Why aren't you telling
me? Correct. This is you shit. And so he didn't know. So I can't say on this one, Harry does a lot of stupid shit. This one, this is not
one. He can get a pass for this.
He'll give him a pass. Fine. But so they have to educate him and tell him that it's very rare to be a parcel mouth. In fact, the reason why the logo for Slytherins is a snake is because Salazar Slytherin was a parcel mouth and most people aren't. And that the heir of Slytherin would most likely be able to speak parcel tongue. And so now they're like, he could be related to Salazar Slytherin. He lived thousands of years ago. You could be his heir. So, of course, that makes Harry feel self-conscious because we already know that the Sorting Hat wanted to put him in Slytherin when he first got the Hogwarts. So, and he's never told this to Ron and Hermione, and we know he tells them everything. So this got him feeling some type of way. So after this incident, people are avoiding him like the plague. They're like, I ain't fucking with that dude. I don't like him. Like, who knows? Like, he talks to snakes. This is not okay. Because mostly dark wizards talk to snakes. So as the next day, they have a blizzard. So herbology is canceled. And Harry cannot get over the fact that Justin is mad at him or thinks that he was trying to egg the snake on. Which they say it looked like you're trying to egg it on. How? When he talked to it, yeah, it stopped.
How, Sway?
Right?
Makes no sense.
You ain't got the answer, Sway.
So he goes looking for Justin to try to explain what happened. And he gets into the library and he sees the Hufflepuffs over there gossiping. So he's like, oh, okay, well, they'll know where Justin is. And he overhears them gossiping about him and saying, you know what? Harry probably is the heir. You saw him try to do that. And Colin Creevy got it because he was annoying Harry. And you know he hates Filch. And that's what he did to Mrs. Norris. So Harry listens to this for a while and he gets mean and so gets mad. So he jumps out and he confronts them and he confronts Ernie McMillan because McMillan was the one who was talking all that shit.
Ernie got a big set of balls on him, man. Yeah. Ernie's out here. He knows this dude speaks parcel tongue. Mm-hmm. He knows this dude could be the heir of Slytherin. Yet he's like, just so you know, I have a long lineage,
right,
of wizardborn, just so you know.
McMillan is a pureblood. He's one of the Sacred 28. But the funny thing is, when Harry pops out, he's like, Harry, well, you know what? Yeah, he tries to be all like big about, yeah, we know it was you and we know that you hated your muggle, the muggles you were living with. We all know that. And then he's like, but by the way, I'm a pure blood. So if you are coming for anybody,
if you were thinking about it, I'm not the one.
It ain't me, right?
Don't be looking in here.
So on one hand, he was all trying to be big about, but he also was like, by the way, don't come for me. I'm a pure blood. Try one of these muffles.
Go get somebody else if you were thinking about it, because you shouldn't have been thinking about it, because I got that pure blood in me. Multiple generation. Pure
blood, Sacred 28 right here.
But Justin, he is hiding from you.
Yeah, Justin's hiding. He ain't coming down because he's hiding from me. So
wait, then Harry says, did you not hear me trying to tell him to turn the snake away? He said, I heard.
Yeah, I heard you speaking parcel tongue.
But also, he knows that like Hermione is part of his crew, so that doesn't track either.
This just shows how stupid people get when they're panicked, right?
Very true. Like, very true.
They're afraid. They're not thinking straight. It don't make sense, and they don't care. They just need some answers.
No, this is when people say, "I have one black friend." Hermione is his one non-magical blood friend.
I mean, yeah, because his other friend is a pure blood. So, yeah, this could be like, oh, yeah, my street cred.
I love my bloods. I got a friend.
I got a friend. Yeah. I got one friend. Yeah. So Harry leaves. He's pissed off. He's walking through the castle aimlessly. He always seems to be aimlessly walking. I think he needs a hobby. He runs into Hagrid. Hagrid has a dead rooster. And he lets us know that a lot of roosters and little things have been coming up dead around the campus. I wonder why. And he notices that Harry's feeling kind of down. He's like, hey, you need anything? Harry's like, no, I'm fine, whatever. And he walks off. And of course, he walks and literally stumbles over Justin Finch Fletchley and nearly headless Nick. And they're both petrified. And Nick, being a ghost, he's petrified in a weird way. He went from being all gray and shadowy to being like dark black, looking like someone like dipped him in some soot or something.
Isn't it some bullshit that you could die and still be susceptible to shit? Like, I shouldn't have to deal with this anymore. I am dead.
Like, I've served my time. I did my death thing.
How about the fact that JFF is hiding, yet he still gets got? You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, he's coming down for transfiguration class, right? Because
he's Lemony Snicket. He is a series of unfortunate events.
Or JFF, man. And that dude was supposed to be trying to stay out of the fracas. Yet here he is, still getting petrified.
But this don't look good for HP either, because they were saying, oh, we know you're trying to go after Justin because he told you he was Muggleborn. And who's the next one that gets petrified? Like, dang, it's not looking good for you.
No. And why is Harry always the first one on the scene whenever something happens? Like,
that's a bigger question.
It's not looking good, my guy.
He needs to just go his ass to class and go his ass back to his dorm.
Never where the fuck he's supposed to be.
Like, just be where you're supposed to be, Harry, for once.
Well, that's one thing that's crazy, though, about Harry just walking around, is that you're going to stumble on some shit if you're just walking around. And he always be stumbling on some shit.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, and that's the thing. That's why people think he's guilty. Like, he always just happens to be around. Like, come on now. So Harry has a dilemma at this point. He's like, oh, I could just not be here and let someone else find them, or I can go tell someone. And as he's trying to figure out what he's going to do, Peeves comes along, and Peeves blows up his spot and was just like, oh my God, look, attack, attack, attack. And then everybody comes running out where they all were. I don't know, but somehow they were right where they needed to be. I also note that while he's finding Justin's body and everything, there are spiders that are also running away. So
it happens in the halls, but like, you hear attack, 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 and then everyone comes running out of the classrooms. Like,
right?
Do the teachers not maintain any control where they can tell those kids?
That's how you know there weren't very many black wizards, because if I hear attack, 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 I ain't running towards it.
You know who is not noted there? Dean. Dean ain't there.
Dean was not there.
Blaze.
Blaze was like, I'm good. Angelina was like, I'm cool. Tell me about it later. Like,
you guys are so right. The moment that they're like, we're running towards some shit, Dean looked at Angelina in class and actually spit it, and they said, I think we're gonna go ahead and sit right here, and we're gonna go ahead and stay right here, because I don't know what's going on out there, and I'm not going to figure it out.
They said, sit the fuck down.
I'm definitely double fold, not going nowhere.
Dean being a Muggleborn, he's like, I'm definitely not going over there,
because you know why? Because he wasn't wandering the fucking later halls by himself. Like, why was Justin out there by himself?
Yeah,
which I know we're not at the movie yet, but how did Dean not go first in the movie?
Right? I'm not going to get into any records. I'm just going to go ahead and do what I
got. He doesn't go anywhere without Seamus. He's like, you will protect me. You are my shield.
You're my shield. You're like, boom, you first. So everyone comes running. They see it. They're all like, oh, Harry's here again. It was him. And then Ernie McMillan with his dumbass is like, I knew it was him. He's got it. Caught with red-handed. I'm like,
listen, Ernie McMillan said, listen, I told JFF to hide and don't be coming near you. Yet here we are, and he's sitting at your feet. And you try to tell me it wasn't you, but here you are. You got caught with the gun. You sitting here with the smoking gun and said, I don't know how he did this to him. That's how he thought.
And once again, Harry needs to go full Shaggy. Wasn't me.
Listen, at this point, though, I don't know if that Shaggy mode would work, because he's standing right here. It's too conspicuous. It's too much that it just happens to be. You know what I'm saying? It's like the second time. You just tell me that you just happened upon this two different times? Come on, man.
He's just always in the thick of things.
Yeah. You need more people.
Like you just happened upon that troll. Nobody believes you, Harry. No one.
Caught him red-handed creeping with the girl next door, and you still say it wasn't me. That's how it works.
That's how it works. You're holding the thing in your hand. It wasn't me. It just appeared. It operated here. I don't know.
Exactly.
So McGonagall's there, takes control of the scene. She's like, y'all get out of here. Peeves is still trying to cause a ruckus. She's like, Peeves, leave. Peeves is scared of her because he tried to do a little song and McGonagall's like, cut. And Peeves cuts out. So McGonagall's like, hey, it's out of my hands, Potter. You're caught like right here. So she walks them over to Dumbledore's office. His password is Lemon Drop, by the way, everybody, in case you want to go to Dumbledore's office. And she drops him off there. And that is the end of chapter 11. Chapter 12, Polyjuice Potions. We find Harry in Dumbledore's office. Dumbledore is nowhere to be seen. Now, why would you drop a child off in an office with nobody in there? Like,
that's true. I'm gonna get into that.
The pictures are watching him.
The pictures were all asleep. It was noted that the pictures were all asleep, and he was just standing in the office by himself.
Because McGonagall knows that Harry would never do anything to jeopardize his future Quidditch career.
McGonagall was just caught him red-handed petrifying people.
And I also wonder too, could he get out? Like, would that gargoyle let him out without Dumbledore's permission? I don't know.
We never see how he leaves Dumbledore's office. We only see him going into Dumbledore's office.
If Harry is dumb enough to stay in Filch's office when he's in trouble, he ain't going anywhere when he's in Dumbledore's office. He's fine.
Damn, you got a point.
And the sorting hat is in there. There's all kind of shit in that office watching Harry.
So, speaking of the sorting hat, like Natasha said, he's in there. He sees the sorting hat. You know, he's having worries. He's a parcel mouth, and that might mean he might be the heir Slytherin. So he puts the hat on, and the hat goes, what do you want, Harry? What do you want? What's your beef? And he's like, are you sure? Like, I'm wondering. And the hat's like, oh, you think I made a wrong decision, or you're asking if I made a wrong decision? And Harry's like, yeah. And the sorting hat says, I stand by it. You would have done great in Slytherin. Harry's not happy about that. So he rips the hat off and kind of throws it back on the shelf. And then he sees an old, disgusting, nasty bird. And he's like, what's going on with this thing? And then it like explodes and sets itself on fire. And of course, that's when Dumbledore walks in.
But I'm sure Harry was looking for Seamus. He was like, fire. Something blew up. Where's Seamus?
But this is twice in like 5 minutes that Harry is pretty much kind of caught red-handed, like destroying something. So he's not having a good run right now. So Dumbledore comes in. He's like, look, I swear, your bird, I don't know what happened. It just caught on fire. I didn't do anything. And Dumbledore's like, oh, no, it's all good. We learn that this is his Phoenix Fox, which we know he's named after Guy Fox, which he was the guy who had the plot to blow up Parliament. So I guess that makes sense to name a phoenix after someone who blew something up, especially when it just blows up. And he's like, hey, he's a phoenix. He's supposed to do that. I've been waiting for this bird to go ahead and do that and regenerate itself. And here's where we learn some important things about phoenixes. Keep this in mind for later. One, they can carry immensely heavy loads. Two, their tears have healing powers. Why have we not tried it on the petrified people? I don't know, but something to keep in mind. They can heal.
We have the mandrakes. We don't need it.
We're waiting for mandrakes to grow up. Maybe take some tears and heal them now. I don't know. All right. And then three, they are highly faithful. I wonder if that's going to come back into play later. We'll see. So anyways, at this point, Hagrid busts into the office and he basically like, I'm here to affirm Harry's innocence. I was just with him seconds earlier in the corridor. He couldn't possibly have done it, and blah blah blah. And Dumbledore is finally able to get through and be like, Hagrid, I don't think he did it. And Hagrid's like, oh, okay, then peace out. And he like just leaves. Like he literally goes, okay, fine, and leaves the office. Like, I don't even know what to say to that. Anyway, so Dumbledore asks Harry, like, first Harry's like, oh, thank you for not thinking it was me, it wasn't. And Dumbledore's like, it's fine, it wasn't you, but is there anything you need to tell me? And at this point, this might be when I would tell
everything going on,
supposedly most powerful wizard ever, all the shit that's going on.
Well, I found out I speak snake. That's a thing.
Yet Harry doesn't say anything.
But what would you really tell him at this point?
And I've been hearing voices in the hall that's been saying it wants to kill, and then all these people are keep getting hurt.
And this house elf keeps popping up and telling me there's some shit going down, and I don't know what it is. These were just three things, I don't know, off the top of my head, that I would run by this dude.
Yep. And I might mention that I'm pretty sure that house elf belongs to the Malfoys.
He doesn't know the Malfoys yet. He does not know about the house elf belongs to the Malfoys. He doesn't know
that who the house elf belongs to. Yeah.
He's pretty sure they already, and then we know Malfoy is their favorite target, but they've already hypothesized that he belongs to Malfoys. And if you look at the things Dobby said, there's plenty of clues to.
Yes, but that one is just one that that's just like a general thing that I always feel if I'm Harry, that is probably a Malfoy shenanigans. But Natasha, those other three things are things that I'm definitely. Are easy things I could just say, listen, I thought I heard if you hear things, that's pretty fucked up. I'm hearing things. I talked to a snake. Everybody freaked out. That's also weird. I didn't know I could do that.
Dumbledore had to know he was a parcel mouth, though, because, like, you know, Snape was like, hey, this kid talked to the snake during the duel, you know?
And then there's this house elf that keeps popping up. And I don't know anything about that, but he said there's some dangerous shit going on. And I flew here in a car that I didn't know about. So, Natasha, you're 100% correct that Dumbledore knows all these things, but he says, is there anything you should tell me, Harry? Harry should have been like, any of these things, because he doesn't know that Dumbledore knows these things. Because you're right, he does know all this shit, but he don't know that. So when he thinks of all these things,
right,
he says, no, I'm good. That's wild.
Nothing to say.
Which is funny because Harry thinks of every single thing he should tell Dumbledore, and Dumbledore reads it off of him because Dumbledore is a skilled legilimens.
Bet.
And then Harry's like, nope, I'm good. And Dumbledore's like, cool.
Okay, so we know that Snape is a legilimens, knows legilimency as well. I don't think that Snape is constantly reading the kids' minds, but I think that Dumbledore. I talked about before how I think Dumbledore knows everything going on. I think he just stay reading minds if he thinks he needs to. So,
and that's why we hardly see him, right? Because he's too busy in everybody's business.
So in this situation, when he's like, is there anything you need to tell me? He's already running through it. Normally, though, when Harry was having the first conversation, he wasn't just reading his mind. He was chilling. But then he's like, anything else? And now Harry's like, he's like, cool, let me get up in there. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay, that interesting, that okay that got it, okay Harry, you're free to go.
and yeah, and that's pretty much it that happens in his office. Again, Dumbledore knows all the stuff, and we still have like what, six more chapters? I don't know. Anyways, back to the story. So at this point, everyone at Hogwarts is panicked. There have been three, and if you count nearly headless Nick, four victims so far of whatever this thing is.
You said if you count nearly headless Nick, that's the most terrifying one. That dude's already dead and he died again.
What kind of thing can do that to a ghost? Everyone's like, what the fudge? And so there, everyone's panicked. And it's coming up on Christmas. And a lot of people sometimes stay at Hogwarts for Christmas. Not this time.
I'm out.
Pretty much everybody's trying to leave except for our golden trio and the Weasleys. And of course, Draco and Crabbe and Goyle are there because Crabbe and Goyle just follow Draco around. And Draco knows he's safe because he's a pureblood and he ain't going nowhere. So they're all staying for Christmas. And we learn on Christmas that the Polyjuice potion is done.
So the fact that a potion is able to boil in a bathroom, why has no one come to just clean the restroom?
Remember, that's Moaning Myrtle's bathroom. No one goes in there because she's in there and they hate her and she's annoying. So you don't need to clean
it. Custodial.
Right.
What about Filch?
He's got to come by just to check.
So no one goes in there because no one uses it. So Filch isn't going to do extra work. You think Filch is going to do extra work?
So just because that out of order sign is up there, Filch doesn't go in?
Filch barely does his job as it is.
That's wild to me.
Yeah, I mean, clearly at least for a month, because this shit's been boiling for a month. So at least for the last month, he hasn't been in there.
Wait, can we also, real quick here, Fred, George, Ginny, and Ron stay Percy at Hogwarts over Christmas? Oh, and Percy as well? So instead of getting, like, a Christmas job. What do they call those? A seasonal job, you know, because Arthur and Molly, they need a little extra money, right? Christmas coming up for these kids.
They're checking on their son, though, Natasha. You know
what I'm saying? They go on vacation.
They go to visit their sons in Egypt.
They need a seasonal job because they don't have money for books every year.
They have two grown-ass sons with good jobs who don't help out the family.
That's not their jobs. Molly and Arthur could have got seasonal work at, you know, Flourish and Bots or the Green somewhere.
They can help their family out. Like,
but they're going to Egypt to visit Bill. So like it doesn't cost anything for them to go on vacation. Boom, you apparate to Egypt. That's free. You stay at Bill's house. That's free. He feeds you while you're there. That's free. That sounds like a free ass vacation to me.
But they had the time. Take on some extra work. So that the next fact that year,
you think that they would let Arthur Weasley back in the Flourishing Box after that.
You just made my point.
After that show he had with Lucius is out of this world. He's not allowed back in that store.
What's the name of the bar? What's the name of the bar?
The Leaky Cauldron?
Yeah. He could have went to the Leaky Cauldron and, you know, bust some tables for Christmas break. Like, there's just options, you know, here. Maybe they do
because they're able to send some Christmas presents. Obviously, Molly knitted them, but, you know, you have to pay for yarn, right? So they send the sweaters and Harry gets his, of course. Harry gets a toothpick from the Dursleys and a letter asking whether he can stay at Hogwarts for the summer.
Unfortunately.
And that would be a gift for both of them. I know. Harry's like, if I could have stayed, I would have last summer.
Which, we know how the magic works. How can the Dursley say, oh, you should stay at Hogwarts for the summer, knowing full well he has to come home so that the magical protection stays on him?
I don't think Petunia told Vernon. I don't think Petunia had told Vernon, like, hey, it sounds good to send this, but he's bringing his ass back here for the summer.
He's coming back. Calm your asses down. He'll be back. Which, I don't know why he doesn't just get the Weasleys to get custody of him so he can stay with them for the summer. Like, do they not do that in the Wizarding World?
Shantae, they already have enough children. Don't add another child to this family.
What's one more?
And they can't feed the motherfuckers they got. Like, what do you mean?
He should have. And maybe the Dursleys could pay so they don't have to have Harry
But
Potter.
To be fair, he didn't know until the very last bit when they went to the bank that, you know, the cupboard was actually bare.
Everybody knows the Weasleys are poor. He saw Ron's greasy sandwich the first train ride the first year. Like, come on. Anyway, so they go to Moaning Myrtle's bathroom after the feast. Actually, no. Before the feast, they go to the bathroom and Hermione tells them they have to get hairs from Crabbe and Goyle and that she already has hers and she has already worked up the plan. Hermione is like the evil mastermind of this whole thing. She's already worked up the plan of how they're going to do it. She has created these cakes that she has poisoned with sleeping draught. And she's like, make sure they find it. We know they're dumb enough to eat whatever, so just make it happen. So they go to the feast. They're eating. They're having a great time. Harry and Ron leave the cakes on the banister. Like, they're not even on plates. They're just left there. Crabbe and Goyle come by, and they eat them. And then they immediately get knocked out. So the boys steal their hair. They think enough to take their shoes, because Crabbe and Goyle are huge, and they are not. And they shove them into a closet and lock them in. They get back up to the bathroom. They throw in the hairs. The colors turn yellow like pus for Hermione. If, what was it? Harry's was green like boogers and Ron's was brown like shit. And then they drink them anyway.
Hey, man, you got to do what you got to do when you're trying to prove that Malfoy was behind this.
Yeah, they got to get that confirmatory evidence. So the boys turn. They have to change their clothes. They come out. They're like, okay, Hermione, let's go. And Hermione's like, nah, I'm not going. Go ahead and go without me. And they're like, what? And what's going on? And she's like, don't waste time. You only have an hour. Go. So they leave her and they go. And this is where the plan starts to fall apart, because Hermione didn't plan this far, because they have no clue how to get into the Slytherin common rooms.
It's what happens when you're 12.
Yeah. So they're wandering around. They're like, well, I guess they're in the dungeon. So they head down there. They see one girl, some cranky Ravenclaw. And she's like, I'm not a Slytherin. How dare you? And then they run into Percy. And they're like, oh no, what are you doing down here? And Percy's like, I'm a prefect, what the hell? And then that's when Malfoy comes and rescues them, surprisingly. And Malfoy is a jerk to Percy. Percy leaves, but also, what was Percy and that Ravenclaw girl doing in the dungeons?
They're doing adult shit.
Hogwarts after dark.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. Those are two prefects on patrol, making sure that the school is safe.
Yeah, there's hardly anybody in this school. Hey, we can go find the Marauders map and see what they were doing, where they were. Anyways, so they follow Draco into the Slytherin common room, and the code to get into the room is pure blood. What
ridiculous
actual ridiculous fuck? Because not all Slytherins are purebloods. Like, what the hell? Anyways, so they get in there. They start talking to Malfoy. We learn so much from our little Hitler youth. And we learn a couple of things. One.
Did you call him a Hitler youth?
Did you hear what he was saying and how he was saying it? Oh, yeah. This is like proof positive that like you're taught to hate. Like, what the hell?
Yes, 100%.
So, we learn Arthur Weasley has been fined 50 galleons for the car. There was an article in the Daily Prophet. We also learned that Malfoy's dad is quoted as wanting him fired. So talk about needing an extra job, right, Natasha?
Mm-hmm.
We learn that Malfoy Manor was raided, but obviously Lucius was able to hide stuff in enough time. But we also learned that there's a secret chamber underneath their drawing room floor. And I believe this is where, when they're captured later in the books, this is where they were keeping them. So look at that, all the way in book two, and we come back to it in book seven. So we also learn that the Daily Prophet is not reporting about the petrifications, which means Dumbledore's keeping it hush hush. And dang, you gotta be powerful to keep something this juicy on the DL. And we confirm that the Malfoys know something about what's happening in the chamber. And this is where I say, this is where anybody else would say, okay, Dobby is the Malfoy's house elf, because Draco talks about like, yeah, my dad said to just let it happen and don't interfere and just and stay out of it. But like, if I knew who it was and I would help them. But so that means Malfoy's dad knew that all this stuff was going to go down. Yep. And he told Draco to stay out of it. This is confirmatory evidence that Dobby is their house elf. Like, if you're thinking this through, this is what you should have been telling Dumbledore. But whatever. Anyways.
But Harry doesn't think that far ahead because Harry is 12.
Harry is 12. But like, well, fine. Harry's 12. He's annoying.
Just caught astray for being 12.
We also learn that Malfoy knew that the chamber had been opened before. The last time the chamber was opened, a Muggleborn was killed, and that the person who did it was expelled and possibly sent to Azkaban. Wink, wink, wink. Who could have been that person? We don't know. So we get a lot of information. None of it is the information they were actually looking for. And then the Polyjuice potion starts to wear off. So they have to hightail it out of there. They make some excuse about their stomach being too full from eating. They get back to the bathroom. Hermione still hasn't come out. They try to like, oh, we got so much info. We got to tell you everything. And then Moaning Myrtle comes out and basically blows up Hermione's spot and be like, oh, you should see how ugly she looks. Oh, no. And we learned that Hermione had stolen a hair off the robe of Millicent Bulstrode when she was in that headlock. It was her cat hair. Polyjuice potion is not made for animal transformation. So Hermione is stuck in like a half cat, half person type mode. And so they're like, oh, well, we're going to have to take you to Madame Pomfrey to see if she can fix this. And that's the end of chapter 12.
Man, oh man.
So if you're Madame Pomfrey, do you think it's more likely to run across a student that has no bones or a student that has been half transformed into an animal? Like, which one has she seen more of?
I think there's a lot of kids who try to transform and transfigure themselves and get stuck.
Yeah.
When McGonagall comes out into the hallway, when Justin is in the hallway, somebody had turned a classmate into a badger.
Yeah, she's probably like, okay, whatever. And they said it. She won't ask any questions. And I'm like, because she's just like, I've seen it. I don't care. Get in here. We'll fix it.
Yep.
These chapters were pretty interesting in the fact that we deal a lot with Polyjuice Potion. We deal a lot with what's going on at the school. It gets us into our favorite topic that I think we're probably end up covering in every book. And There's no safer place than Hogwarts.
No safer place.
That's what we were told by Hagrid. He said that in the first book. And here we are once again talking about how safe Hogwarts is. We got a snake running loose, just petrifying people. We got a bludger that attacked a child. We have a house elf that can just pop in and pop out, right? We have kids boiling transfiguration potion and knocking children out so that they can take the hair off of them. There is no safer place than Hogwarts except for the people that are in. That seems to be the situation we got going on here.
I want to know what's happening everywhere else if this is a safe place. Like, what's going on in Diagon Alley while we're not there? Because, damn.
And you know what? The idea of a dueling club, the more you think about it, it's like going to work or like sending your kid to like Centennial High School here. Like, we're going to have a fight club so you can learn how to fight.
I mean, yeah. Because it's not like you can use like practice spells. There's no practice spells. They're just spells.
Yeah, that's the thing. The dueling club, they didn't have any instructions. So it was just like, okay, you're going to duel. You didn't get told how to do a Protego. You didn't get told how to do an Expelliarmus. You didn't get told anything. And then you didn't give them spells to use against each other. So they're just hitting each other with whatever they know.
CJ, worse off, even worse than that, when he's like, you're right, I didn't teach you guys how to defend yourself. Do this thing. And he does a hand motion. And Harry's like, can you do it again? He's like, I'll just copy what you saw. That is not teaching.
And Harry goes, oh, you mean drop my wand?
That's not teaching. Yet we have Snape wanting to hurt the kid. Listen, I cannot wait till Natasha one day tries to defend Snape. This dude whispers to Draco to make the snake appear just so he can scare the motherfucker, not knowing that Harry can have a full-ass communication with the snake. But that was the plan. Because there's no safer place than this spot where the teachers are trying to hurt the kids.
I'd like to point out, too, that Harry does show himself to know more than one fucking spell during the duel. Because he hits Malfoy with a couple of zingers. Just saying.
No, he hit him with the Rictus Sempra, and then Malfoy got him with the Tarantella or whatever. So he tickled him, and Malfoy made him dance uncontrollably. Like, what the fuck?
Well, because they're kids. They don't have the advanced magic yet. Because, like, Lockhart says, just copy me and do this. And it's like, that's nonverbal magic. We learn later that's super advanced magic that like 6th and 7th years are learning.
Which is why Hermione's in a headlock in the corner. So,
like, you know. They didn't even have their wands. They just dropped the wands and went at it melee. Like, damn. Okay.
Yeah. The fact that they look over and she's in a headlock whimpering because they're like, we don't know no spell, so we just gonna fight. Like, that is.
Yeah, we're just gonna beat your ass.
Yeah, we're just fighting. And like you said, it's like going to a high school and having a class on how to fight each other. This is ridiculous that you're doing this here with no kind of teaching. They mentioned how someone was a world class duelist on campus. Yeah, we didn't tap them. We didn't tap them to come run this class. Come on.
And it was authorized by the headmaster. Dumbledore's
we
like,
have
yes, sir,
a basilisk loose in the building. We have a man that knows that the chamber's been open before. Yet we're continuing on as business as usual.
Still don't know where the chamber is, even though we know it was open 50 years before. Like, you have 50 years to find this thing.
We know that it exists. Before it was folklore. This man knows it does exist. Yes, it is hidden. But why for the last 50 years has he not been the only one looking, seeing how he does know it exists positively? It's no longer folklore for him.
I will say this as well. Moaning Myrtle has always bothered me because obviously the entrance to the chamber is in her bathroom, right? And not only have they not bothered to figure out how she was killed 50 years ago, because it was her that was killed when the basilisk was loose before, but they don't even go, just like you guys mentioned earlier, they don't even go in her bathroom to clean it. So it's like, was she that annoying to both the adults and the children that they were just like, we don't give a fuck. We're not going in the bathroom, check on her.
Do you know how hard it is to talk to a hormonal teenage girl? You know how hard that is.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine her being that for 50 years. I'm going nowhere near her.
I would just like to point out, totally, you know what? They give us girls a bad name. Teenage boys are just as hormonal and may not whine, but they get fucking violent. And maybe if we gave them some more language.
Yeah, have you read Harry Potter book 5? They whine all the time.
Like, maybe if we gave them better access to their emotions or words, whatever, maybe they just fucking like cry and whine instead of like try to fight every day at school because you looked at their fucking pumas.
Dumbledore, though, is a collector of knowledge. Why has he not gone and talked to this ghost just to get her story so he's collected more knowledge? This is wild because he is not just the headmaster. Things are supposed to be safe at this school, so he should have some kind of awareness of what's happening around here.
But he wasn't the headmaster at the time of the attack, so he probably trusted that, oh, the investigation was completed, this is the report that I got, and then he didn't go and do any extra investigating.
CJ, I'm going to stop you right there.
When he becomes
the leader, I'm going to stop all y'all right there. He can turn to the portrait in the headmaster's office and say, hey, did you investigate this shit? Nah, dog. Well, then fuck. Let me go look into it.
Wait, I got you one better. We haven't got to this point yet, but since we're reaching forward, he has a fucking time turner.
This is true. He has a time turner.
You're not wrong.
He has a time turner.
Listen, a lot of things can be solved. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and throw out that evidence that you just presented because a lot of things can be solved with this time turner. So we're not going to utilize it for this right now. So we'll throw that out because you're correct. But using the things that are presented here.
Inadmissible
evidence. Because you're correct.
I would like justice for Myrtle. Nobody gave a damn to even figure out what happened to her 50 years. And nobody checks on her now. How was the bathroom free to brew polyjuice potion for a fucking month?
They go in there all the time and just be chilling in there. And no one, and they're not worried about being caught. No one goes in there. That
not anyone. Not Filch. Not Dumbledore. Nobody goes in there for weeks on end. It's crazy. And yes, Myrtle's annoying. Yes, she haunts the bathroom, but no one's gone to see what's up. Someone in the last 50 years should have got this girl's story, and it has not happened. And Dumbledore said to Minerva, well, it appears the chamber has been opened once again. So you knew this thing was here, and you have just been
time. We were telling people it didn't exist, and you knew it did.
Yep.
And he knows that Voldemort is the one doing it. He's trying to figure out how. This is where he starts realizing, okay, there's some horcruxes or something else is going on here, and this is how he, like, so by the end of this book, he pretty much figures out that Voldemort made horcruxes. But he don't be talking to Harry about it until, like, book 5.
Well, no, this is when he had his first inkling of it. This was the first inkling of it, because he says later on that he's like, the Horcrux in this book is the first time he has seen one. And that's when he starts suspecting how many. And it's not until way later that he has a fully, like, fleshed out theory, because he knows, you know, the magical number 7, which is why he suspects that there's 7 Horcruxes. He knows how Voldemort operates, so he thinks that they're going to be things that are of significant, you know, magical historical value or whatever. Like, he's trying to leave his imprint on the world, but he's not thinking about that stuff right now. What he's thinking about right now is, what is potentially killing my students?
Right.
True. He also hasn't talked to, was it Professor Slughorn? Was that his name?
Yeah. Slughorn, no, he don't go to the school right now.
Yeah, he hasn't talked to him yet and got that fake memory from him or whatever. But I don't know, like, Hogwarts in general, like, you know, we got Hagrid walking around with, like, the dead chickens. We got the spiders fleeing. And it's just like, you know, why is this castle not charmed better? How the hell
they pop in and pop out?
Where are the protection spells?
Yeah, people aren't supposed to be able to apparate into Hogwarts, but Dobby does it, like
But why have we not had a charm against this? This is the point.
So non-people can do it, but people can't, like...
Well, also, you have two very skilled legilimens in Snape and in Dumbledore. How do you not have a pre-crime unit like Minority Report? Like, they could be your precogs. You read something crazy from a student, and then all of a sudden that student is, like, in there. You're trying to get a confession out of them. Or you just lock them up. Put them in the room of requirement. Nobody knows how to get in there. Like, stop all of this foolishness that's happening way ahead of time.
You want to have like an NSA, like they're spying on their own citizens? That's fucked up. You have to
sometimes. There's no safer place than Hogwarts. That's what I was told. That's what we're sticking by. Yet we are finding many. It wasn't just Hagrid that believed this, but
that's true.
So here's the real question. Would you send your children to Hogwarts?
Hell yeah. Like, what happened to the question?
Yeah, of course. I'm still trying to go to Hogwarts. Like, what? I just know I'm not going to be wandering the halls like Harry. Harry, dumb.
Well, and also 9 months without a child, that sounds like a blessing.
For free. Do you think that the Black children do, in fact, fare better because they have a different level of self-preservation?
But in addition, though, they do have sense enough to not go find out some shit. Then they're not fucking around and finding out. They don't need to. They say, I'm going to go ahead and sit my ass right here and wait for everybody to come back.
Yep.
Because it don't make no sense for me to go look at. Yeah, you say he's petrified. He might be dead. I don't really know. He over there? That's crazy. You going to do the little lean? I'm going to lean and see.
I can't help him.
Damn. And then leave it at about that.
I definitely think that's a great way to put it. We don't believe in fuck around and finding out, especially as a kid. You know, they all got threatened at the fucking, 9 3/4. Don't fuck up. Don't be over there. Keep your ass out of the forbidden forest. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not sending no howlers and embarrassing myself in front of company. You know, they all got that same
quote. Dean, look at me. Do not have them calling me up here and coming down here to get your ass, because if you had to come home, it's going to be even worse for you at the house. That talk was had. And he knows to not go down there and be acting a fool, because he do not want to be getting his mama caught up here. And then
Angelina's mom was like, you got to work twice as hard to get half as far. There's only 5 of us up there. So if you fuck up, it's going to show badly on all of us. Like, they had this whole speech every summer.
Yeah, he don't get no howler. He don't get a whooping.
You know what, though? Ron and Harry got a whooping, and it was probably the first time the Whomping Willow had ever introduced them to a switch.
Okay, on that note, we are going. Do you think that there is no safer place than Hogwarts? Let us know in the comments. Let us know in the poll. That'll be up. Man, the switch. Let us know. You can find Shantae at The Villain Shantae on Instagram. You can find CJ at Keyboard Sarcasm on all social media platforms. Natasha's at @NatCole_. You can find me at KG Fury on all social media platforms. And remember, you can follow us at Justice for DT Pod. Join us next week, in 2 weeks, as we talk about chapters 13, 14 and 15. We're coming to the end of this book. It's going to get good. We're going to be digging in. Yeah, and we're going to be finding out about the chamber a little bit more. Man, that switch combo was great. So we are going to wrap that up, and we're going to see what's going on. Thank you for joining us. Court is adjourned. Good night, y'all.